Today on Changing Course, we're talking with Andrew Seidler, the director of the Office of National Scholarships and Fellowships here on the campus of the University of Tennessee. Andrew, thanks for coming in.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Well, I'm looking forward to finding out exactly what goes on in this office. Can you give me like a general description of what you do?
Sure. So we work with students who are interested in applying for nationally competitive awards. So we're not financial aid. I don't really know anything about the Hope Scholarship. So I work with students who are looking for external funding. And in as much as, you know, there are dollars and cents at play, a lot of it is about sort of the opportunity that's out there. And we're talking about things that many people might have heard about, the Rhodes Scholarship, the Fulbright, and also many others you might not have. But all are highly competitive. And so that's sort of the context in which we interact with students at the university.
Has this office always been here? How long has this been going?
Yeah, I think around 2006 is when the idea of it started. Ann Mayhew sort of started the office, and it's grown slowly, organically, and I think that's been a good thing. But it's only been staffed by one, you know, a full-time person for, you know, maybe 6 years. And I think in that 6 years, you've seen how the university putting more emphasis and resources toward it has resulted in a lot more success in these competitions.
Well, I kind of found about it in a roundabout way. I mean, full disclosure here, I participate in sort of the like an advisory test committee for students before they actually apply for the things. And I just became really intrigued by how it works, because when I was a student here, there was nothing remotely like this. So it's got to be really valuable to a student who wants to go for one of these big scholarships.
Absolutely. So, you know, we emphasize a couple different things. One of the things we emphasize is that the process of applying unto itself is really a valuable one, because it's a reflective tool for students to sort of say, you know, this is who I am, this is what I'm about, and this is where I hope to go one day. And they might have that stuff bottled up in their stomach, their heart, their head, but until they really start saying it to other people, writing it down, I think that it's not real. And so then they start writing these things out and talking with us in our office and the faculty and staff that we interact with, people like yourself, and I think they just get excited. And one of the things that I have really also emphasized is sort of democratizing these things. You know, the Fulbright has this big name. And absolutely, I respect the program and respect the opportunity and demand a lot from students who apply. But I also just try to put aside all that sort of prestige and the rest of it, because I think that is what encourages students to say, this isn't for me.
It reminds me again of when I was a student here, and I knew a lot of extremely brilliant students in those days. I'm excluding myself from that group, obviously, by the way I phrased that. But I don't think any of them even thought to go for it, for kind of the reasons you're saying, like, how am I going to get anything? You know, maybe one or two would go for something. How many students, let's use the Fulbright program as an example, how many students actually come in and say, let's try it?
So sort of at least a recent history, and, you know, as recently as 2012, 2013, you know, we had zero Fulbrights. We had single-digit applicants. And then you look at the past couple of years, this last year we had 52 candidates, 19 students received, which placed us tied for 12th among all universities in the Fulbright, tied with Harvard. It had us fourth among public universities. And this past or this current cycle, we now had 67 candidates, and we've already had 17 students offered Fulbrights. So I think that this sort of democratizing approach to saying, sure, not everyone is going to be a good candidate for the Fulbright. It is a prestigious award. It's highly competitive. But sort of putting aside some of these things, well, you know, you came from a certain high school, or you study a certain thing, or you look a certain way, or you're the first generation in your family to go to college, and saying those are not reasons you shouldn't be applying. And in fact, those might be great reasons for you to apply, because one, you could be competitive. Two, the only way you will receive is if you apply. And three, again, we really see the process of doing it unto itself as being a benefit to students. That said, if no students were receiving, those numbers wouldn't be going up. So students are receiving those awards. We can't purely say, oh, hey, come and apply. And then if zero students out of 67 receive, we'd be in a sticky spot. But I think that all these things by having a process-oriented ethos, I think that we have the numbers sort of are starting to take care of themselves.
What this says to me ultimately is something I've heard for years about higher ed, is that the best and brightest and hardest working students at schools like the University of Tennessee and other public schools easily can compete, if given the tools, with the Harvards and the Yales and the Princetons of the world.
Absolutely. We have some just absolutely phenomenal students at this university. And, you know, we had a Rhodes Scholar this year. We've had two in 5 years. And we had this, you know, high performance in the Fulbright program. And it's not as if these are the only metrics, but I think they're useful metrics to sort of demonstrate that we have students that could compete with any students in the country. And I think that's a good thing to know for your, you know, at once we are land grab, also, you know, our flagship university. And so I think we are attracting some really, you know, top talent, but not just talent, but students who are increasingly persuaded to say, yeah, sure, I'll put myself out there for these awards. And I think we're starting to see a culture of undergraduate scholarship at the university where not only are faculty referring students to me, but students are referring students to me. And that to me tells me something about what, you know, what sort of effect we're having.
I can imagine what happens when students return, because I'm sure the experiences are incredible, and that kind of enthusiasm can only probably generate more people applying, right?
So one of the tricky things with many of these awards is they're so-called sort of out-the-door awards, in the sense that we're talking about, and not in all cases, but in many of them, the Fulbright, the Rhodes, and some of the other postgraduate awards, where they're applying as typically as rising seniors to do as postgraduates. Also graduate students are eligible, recent alumni as well. But certainly, you know, I'll get notes, I'll get postcards from around the world. And that's one of the things, though, that we're really starting to focus on. So students who can speak to that experience, that is really valuable. So recently we had our Fulbright kickoff for this next cycle. And so we, did a Zoom session where we had three of our current grantees, you know, one in Brazil, one in Spain, one in Argentina. And they were talking, you know, on a live teleconference about what they're doing right now. And the questions students asked, even though it was in front of a group and I was there as well, they just asked different questions of them that, you know, I think they have this idea that a student not only will tell them, you know, truth, you know, whatever, but will also just, they can appreciate that they were sitting in that audience a year ago saying, you know, what is the Fulbright? How am I going to be, how am I going to be competitive for something that I just heard about a week ago? And then we really reinforced to say, well, these students you're talking to right now, we're in the exact same position. You know, many of them didn't know what it was, maybe had heard the word. So I think that's something that we've really tried to emphasize. And that's another lever that I think we're trying to pull, which is involving those students who are graduates, but are really got a great experience here, felt well supported, and then can, you know, be champions for these sorts of absolutely life-changing opportunities.
Can you give me more of a picture of where they're going and what kind of majors do they come from, that kind of a thing?
So all over for, you know, the current grantees, I mean, we have social work students. We have students from, you know, many from the College of Arts and Sciences. We have students from ag, I mean, really all over the university. In terms of where they are going, it really covers the globe. I mean, we have students going to, on this current group, going to, let's see, Spain, South Korea.
So they're basically going all over the world in different countries and different experiences for each one of them.
Yes. And, you know, with the Fulbright, we're talking about a year-long fully funded grant to do typically one of three things, you know, to be an English teaching assistant, to do an independent research project, or to pursue a graduate degree.
I can only imagine when these students come back from their Fulbrights and they're out in the workforce, it will never hurt to have that on your resume. I imagine someone applying here and I just saw the word Fulbright. You know, I mean, my ears would perk up, but they would.
So, you know, and it's a funny thing because on the one hand, I talk about this idea of, you know, I try to put some of that prestige aside because I think it has this way of intimidating students. On the other hand, you know, there's some salesmanship to what we're doing, or try to persuade someone to apply for something that they know statistically they're unlikely to get. No one is likely to get it. And so certainly that's one of the things that, you know, we will mention. You have that word on your CV, on your resume, and you are going to invariably, I think, you know, come to the top of a pile where, yes, you are a similar candidate in many other ways. It has great name brand recognition.
I would say the experience itself produces a kind of growth that's not easy to even measure or to market or even need to market.
I think that the level of independence that it both requires and allows for in the freedom is something that you don't really find necessarily in a degree program. Certainly students come to college and they have the opportunity to explore different sorts of things. But when it's a 1 year, you're abroad, you're on your own, and you're really having to make your way, I think that that requires a certain kind of growth and development that has to be just so powerful for students, especially when you're talking about typically, you know, students who are 22, 23 years old.
Do you ever have a little bit of envy, like when you're sending these people out all over the world and going, I want to go to Borneo or, you know, I want to go to Japan?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you sometimes think about this. You're going, to be 22 and on my way to, you know, South Korea for a year. Sure. I mean, but it's also, I think that on a more sort of serious note, I think that one of the things I love about my job is that, one, I don't have all the answers, and I'm honest with students about it. There isn't this magic formula where if you say the following things, do the following things, you'll get a Fulbright. So that's one thing that I have to be honest with them about. But on the other hand, I think that what's really nice is that they keep me on my toes. I mean, these are bright students. It doesn't mean they have all the answers either, but they have this wide range of ambitions, and I get to hear about the projects they're involved in, the things they're interested in, and so I have sort of this, I know 1% about a ton of things, and I really like that, and it's a really fun sort of thing to be let into a really ambitious and interesting student's world, and it is this, by and large, a one-on-one experience where we're working with them and getting to know them and think about, you know, think together about what is possible in their lives. And then, yeah, when they're going to get a fully funded year in Argentina, you're thinking, hey, can I visit? You know, so sure.
I'm almost afraid to ask what's next because the office is obviously doing really well and there's some great results. We had Grant Rigney down here and talked to him. I mean, but what is next? I mean, beat Harvard? I mean, where do you go from here?
I think a few things. So the numbers are really good, and it helps us sort of sell that we know what we're talking about and that it's worth the student's while. On the other hand, because we have this ethos of it is worth your while to engage with us, we don't really talk about those numbers too terribly much. I think that the things that are next for us is, one, there I alluded to, there are so many other awards, and I would say nationally competitive awards is in general sort of a growth industry. There are a lot of both private and public entities that are investing in these sort of scholarship programs to invest in young people who have talent and ambition and perhaps not the means to go on and do certain things. So I think working increasingly with first and second year students who could be competitive for some of these sort of so-called pipeline awards, that's something that we are very much focused on. And then also, you know, you can't just grow and grow and grow. I mean, we can't go from, you know, zero Fulbrights to 19 to a gazillion. But I think being a place where we are consistently a top producing institution, where people say when they're sort of listing off the places that are most competitive in this, you know, prestigious competition, that the University of Tennessee is one of those. So I think that sort of building that is something that I'm really focused on over the next several years.
Thanks again to our guest, Andrew Seidler, for Changing Course, a production of WUOT. I'm Todd Steed.